Greetings and welcome to another edition of Soundography, Crash Course in Music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we have a special guest, because this is another pre-show, another Patreon-backed pre-show. Oh my gosh, I am so excited for this one.
Dream Theater.
Let me welcome to the show, Joe Acosta.
Hi there, gentlemen. How are you this afternoon?
We're good. Glad you could join us for this.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. This is a band that I've been fortunate enough to see in concert a couple times. Third concert was these guys. First was The Inmates. Second was Art of Noise, who we've covered. And third, it was Oingo Boingo. So slowly making their way through my concert lifestyle, I guess, is what we're doing on Soundography.
Where did Reba fall into that?
Yeah, Reba has not fallen into that and will never fall into
Brian,
that.
Brian and I are going to see her in Vegas next time we're there together.
Right. You know, I'd see her in any Get Your Gun. I hear that's good.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'd see her in concert. So I guess we've already spilled the beans. Normally we say, what band are you having us cover? But I kind of already blew it. But let me have you tell us anyway. Tell us again, even though I already said it.
No, I'm looking forward to hearing you guys break down Oingo Boingo. This has been Boingo has been a band for me that, you know, I got into later in life. I think they had they started recording in the early 80s. So I was just a kid when the Only a Lad came out. But by the time that I was a teenager, they were getting heavy rotation on our alternative radio station here in LA, K-Rock. And you know, songs like Dead Man's Party were just on constant repeat every Halloween. And right. and their Halloween concerts here in L.A. were stuff of legend. So by the time that they stopped producing music in the mid-90s, I was in high school, and I had already collected all their albums and knew everything inside and out. But it was kind of a late start for me.
What's your review? Your quick 1 minute review of the movie Forbidden Zone. Have you seen Forbidden Zone?
I've not. You know, I haven't even seen Weird Science for the
connection. Oh wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's for me, it's always been the music. I think it was the music videos that did it.
Yeah.
They were we didn't get MTV until I was maybe 14 or 15 years old, but public access television on Sunday nights, I would watch 1 hour of videos and then go listen to Dr. Demento. And that was my thing to do as a kid, you know?
Oh my God. What a great combination.
And these kinds of, I mean, videos from, and it was always, I don't know if it was what had already gone out of rotation on MTV, because I was, you know, watching Flock of Seagulls and I was watching Boingo and, you know, certain videos were just on constant rotation, like Dead Man's Party, like Party at Ground Zero by,
Fishbone.
I mean, those kinds of things were just what this station played. It might just have been access only, 'cause that's all they had.
Right. Oh, that's so cool, man. I remember those days here too. We had, before MTV or even, you know, while MTV was going on, we had this thing here called Teletoons, and, it had originally been called FMTV. And for some reason, I think they sold or MTV contacted them and bought the naming rights or bought the, cause it was around the time, it was 1981 when they changed it over to Teletoons, and it was, again, public access television, music videos, lots of Oingo Boingo, lots of Thomas Dolby, lots of Howard Jones. I mean, it was the, you know, some of the greatest music in my opinion at the time for sure. But, this is so great. Now, you've kind of already, again, you know, that last answer kind of already answered our next question, but, being a fan forever, are these guys your favorite band of all time?
I'd say it's pretty close. I mean, I think that, you know, if you, if I tell Siri, you know, just start playing music and, a Boingo song comes on, I'm going to keep it going, and I'm probably going to click and play the entire album through. I would only do that for a few other bands, the Beatles, Pink Floyd. That's, you know, really, I mean, it's so I consider them one of the great artists, even though they're so different.
They really are. Yeah.
But again, a unique sound. You can't hear a Danny Elfman composition or an Oingo Boingo song and mm-hmm. not know exactly who it is.
That's totally true. That sound has become so synonymous with Tim Burton style visuals, with that ska horns, but not quite ska, you know. Yeah, you're 100% correct. Man, what a great choice. As you can tell, I'm going to be really excited for this week. Have you seen them in concert?
You know, by the time that they did their last show in 1995, I was still in high school.
So you
and but I have eaten up that double album,
yeah.
The DVD. I mean, for me, that again in the annals of live concerts, that video for me is like the Talking Heads. Mm-hmm. I'm blanking on the name of that live video. That's
Stop Making Sense.
Stop Making Sense.
Yeah.
It has that kind of timeless feel to it for me.
Sure. Are you still in LA?
I am. Yes.
Because Johnny Vados, I'm trying to look it up here, and probably a really bad idea with what's going on with my internet right now is trying to pull up something. But Johnny Vados, who is the drummer, as you know, for a long time, or I think for the duration of the band, has been doing something in LA called Oingo Boingo Dance Party. And it's him. It might be two or three other guys from the band, not Danny Elfman, obviously, but a few other members of the band doing this regular gig, this regular concert thing in LA.
I wasn't familiar with that, but periodically on the day through Halloween and like on the 30th and on the 1st of November at the Nokia Center, which is the concert hall next to Staples in downtown, mm-hmm. Danny Elfman has done basically a similar, not playing boingo things, but he'll lead the LA Phil or he'll lead an orchestra and he'll just go through all of his music.
Oh, and that's so cool.
So it's almost, you know, it's an experience almost like going and seeing John Williams at the Hollywood Bowl, you know, and
yeah.
where it's John, I did see Vato at, he was partnering in a music project with a couple of other artists and just kind of doing these eclectic punk jazz numbers with live artists that would do paintings while they were performing. It was,
oh, really?
It was very, very cool. And it had guys like Mike Watt that used to be with the Minutemen and a couple of other artists, LA punk artists, like, you know, folks that had done their turn with in the 80s punk scene that we had here in LA.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. It looks like, you just missed them at the Coach House in San Juan Capistrano last Saturday. Oingo Boingo Dance. Next show that's on their website at oingoboingodanceparty.com isn't until October 28th. So another Halloween show.
But, right, that makes sense.
God, I could try and figure out a way to get out there for that. I'd love to see that.
You just got to figure out a way to overlap it when you're down here for BlizzCon or
something. Oh my God, no kidding. That is the Sunday before BlizzCon. Oh, dude.
Way to go, Joe. Way to go.
Nicely done, Joe. You think you've...
I think you just made it happen.
You've gotten the gears turning big time. Wow. All right. May have to figure out a way to make that happen. But back to Soundography. So do you have a favorite of their albums or favorite of their songs?
Yeah. You know, actually, I think their final album, Boingo, for me is probably my all-time favorite. Mm-hmm. You know, as I was kind of listening through the entire discography and doing my week of listening to nothing but Boingo, I realized how much their sounds changed. You know, I'd hear a track and then immediately have to go to the Billboard 100 and say, well, who at the number one, or what was the top 10 looking like? And because this just sounds very a moment in time. Mm-hmm. And I think Boingo has that as well, because, I mean, it was 94. You know, I was listening to Nine Inch Nails. I was listening to a lot of this kind of industrial post-grunge kind of rock. And that album captures it. And then plus they've got a 16-minute track that is like Danny Elfman's homage to Sgt. Pepper. And all right. How am I not going to love that?
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, there you go. See, Hammond, I can like 16-minute tracks too.
Okay.
It may not be Prague, but we got a 60-minute track coming from a band I like. Cool. No, this is great. Is there anything that you want people to know as they go into this episode? Things you want them to listen for? I don't know, almost the movie equivalent of, or the music equivalent of Easter eggs, things that they're like, oh yeah, in this song, listen for this one little thing right here.
You know, I would say the biggest kind of Easter egg for me was to listen to, especially like The Only a Lad or Dead Man's Party, and listen to some of the deeper tracks. And I could swear that I was listening to a Tim Burton movie. I swear, yeah. I was watching like one of the Batman films or something like that. And I would keep going back and going, where did I know this from? Or, watch the videos, go back and just, you know, open up YouTube and just start watching these cheesy videos. But they were so, I didn't go down the rabbit hole of seeing who the directors were that they were using, but some of the themes and the, were just so corny, but mm-hmm. so just so much fun to watch. And again, it took me back to sitting in my pajamas, basically being told by my mom, go to bed already. You've got school tomorrow. And wait, there's two more videos left to go.
You know? Totally. Yeah. The Private Life video, that's the one that comes to mind. Just the early Oingo Boingo, like Danny Elfman and his wife beater t-shirt in that cramped looking apartment with the rest of the band peeking in through the windows. And yeah, absolutely. I'm going to have to go back and watch those, see how much of that I really am remembering correctly. But cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's also interesting, and I think it would, you know, for me, I might have been I was too young to understand what politically was going on when they were writing this music. But you really hear these subversive tones in the music. I mean, when you listen to it and consider that he's writing in Reagan America, he's clearly attacking, you know, what he viewed as his political views that he didn't stand up for. And then as you get later and later into some of the other albums, he definitely, you can, it was, I never would have thought that kind of pop music or kind of oddity music would have these political undertones, but I think you hear it when you're, maybe I'm listening for it. I don't know.
Right. Interesting. Okay. That I was probably too young to pick up on that at the time. So I'm totally going to be listening for that this time. Awesome. Love it. Very good. Well, do you have a Twitter or anything you want folks to check out?
You know, I'm gonna plug an Instagram account that is of my brand new puppy.
Oh,
it's at the Chuck Roast the Dog, and Chuck is a Basset Hound that we brought home about a month ago, and for the sake of my friends and family that don't want to see hundreds of photos about my dog, I just made his own Instagram and said,
if you want to see him, you can follow him.
Exactly.
Chuck Roast. That's hilarious.
We did that with my daughter's cat, Janice from accounting. She has her own Instagram account.
Oh God. That's awesome.
I love it. I love that. We got to see whose animal has the most number of followers. Like, you know, is it, Katy Perry's cat, Kitty Purry, or is it, I know there's some other.
Well, there's Covercat.
Yeah, Covercat's got a few, but nothing like, I'm sure Kitty Purry, which is horrible. It just feels wrong to say.
Yes.
But I'm sure she has her own Twitter account or Instagram account or something.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Joe, thank you so much for your support as a patron. We can't thank you enough for that. And thanks for this recommendation. I know I'm going to be excited to listen this week. It's been ages since I've listened to some of these albums. I mean, you know, Dead Man's Party, stuff like Stay and things like that. I'm looking at this. It's like I have the old concert ticket still in the CD case for Dead Man's Party. February 19th, 1986 is when I saw Oingo Boingo at the Rainbow Music Hall, which is now a Walgreens. Oh, that's so sad. But anyway, looking at some of these old albums, it's been forever since I've listened to the Boy Ingo album and Good for Your Soul and Nothing to Fear. This is going to be a fun week.
I'm looking forward to both of your takes on it, and I'm just looking forward to hopefully exposing some people to a band that is more than just one song. You know, it's more than Dead Men's Party.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Well, Joe, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And welcome to another edition of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And you've already heard all that because this is a show that had a pre-thing on it. A pre-show. It's part of the show, but it's a pre-thing before the show. I made that same confusion when I was talking about it when we recorded the pre-show a week ago.
I think they're called introductions.
Oh, fine. Intro. Yes. Okay. So there was an introduction to the episode where we explained how and why we're doing Oingo Boingo. And I've also explained already how excited I am to do this episode. So there you go. How about you? How has your week been of Oingo Boingo music?
I went in, you know, Oingo Boingo strictly knowing their hits. I didn't search them out. I knew them from tons of movies. I knew them from their hits. And I've walked away enjoying their hits still and really enjoying one album in particular.
Yeah, and I can pretty much guess which one that is. That's kind of the one that looks like it almost could be a Tool album based on the cover. Less of the ones that look like the Dia del Muerte festival in Mexico.
So I have a question, and I don't know where to ask it. So I'm going to ask it now, and then you can help me as we go through the episode. And that question is, when did this stop being Oingo Boingo and start being Danny Elfman and the Boingos? Because it suffers from that level 42 thing where the front man really does kind of take over all aspects of the band. And I don't mean in a bad way. I'm just saying that it really became the Danny Elfman show pretty quickly.
I think from the get-go. I mean, for me, because you listen to his solo stuff, especially like the solo soundtrack work that he does, the stuff for Pee-wee's Big Adventure and the stuff for all the Tim Burton, you know, all the other Tim Burton movies. And all that stuff that you say is Oingo Boingo is there in those solo projects. So for me, I mean, I definitely don't want to discount what the rest of the band does, because man, Johnny Vados on drums and Steve Bartek, and I know Steve Bartek, longtime collaborator with him. And of course the horn section, Sluggo and Phipps and Turner, are so much that sound, that horn sound of, Oingo Boingo, that I just feel like the underlying paint by numbers drawing. No, I don't even say paint by numbers, because I really don't want to make it sound like Danny Elfman is everything and these guys just kind of fill in the dots. But, the initial sketch is Danny Elfman's, and then the layers of paint come from the rest of the band. But when you hear all these other projects and all these other things that Danny Elfman does, and there's so much Oingo Boingo in there, then it becomes apparent that he really did set the tone for how the band sounded. I think right from the get-go, right from that initial EP. Even, I mean, before that too, you look at the Forbidden Zone stuff, which we are going to talk about. It's so Danny Elfman, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know any other way to describe it.
And that's the thing, is I did not enjoy this week, but it became very apparent very early that Danny could have done all this in his basement with the right studio equipment if he'd had the technology to do it at the time.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, he could have done it now on his own. But then, I mean, boy, the band, only half of the band is the studio albums. The other half are the music videos and the live performances. These guys, I never saw them live after Dark at the End of the Tunnel. That was the last time I saw them live. I would have loved to see them that farewell tour, but they were such an incredible live band to see. And you could probably guess that just based on, based on the Farewell album, based on just the way they sound, that they've got to be a fun band to see live, and they totally were. All right, so let's go ahead and get into this. Now, I will say, too, and I think I did mention this in the intro as well, that I've been a Oingo Boingo fan since, I think, since Nothing to Fear. So since the early 80s. The first album I think I heard was Nothing to Fear, and then I went back and got Only Lad, and then found the EP, and then moved forward from there with Good for Your Soul and Dead Man's Party and stuff like that. And so been a fan for a long time, and I was surprised when it came time to say, all right, what's your favorite Oingo Boingo album, which we'll talk about here. I was surprised at which one turned out to be my favorite, because I would have thought it would have been one of those first two or three.
So, but, my other question for you is, do Oingo Boingo fans have a name? Like there's Kiss like, Army or.
Right. Like the Boingettes or something like that. I don't think, as far as I know, no, I don't know if there is a name for Oingo Boingo fans. Maybe the Elfmen.
Maybe. That's not bad. But then it sounds like.
It's not bad. It's a little sexist. But
yeah, it's a little sexist. And it seems a little seasonal.
Seasonal? Oh, ha. Right. Yeah, I'd be surprised. It seems like, you know, if there's any band that's going to lend themselves to a name, right, like have a collective name, it sure feels like Oingo Boingo would totally be one of those bands.
Yep.
But no, and as far as I know, none of them are not no name for us. All right, well, let's go ahead and start here. They are an American new wave band formed by Danny Elfman in 1979, combining rock, ska, pop, and world music into their sound. They found their start in a performance art group originally called the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo. They were formed in 1972 by Richard Elfman, Danny's brother. This group was patterned after Spike Jones and Frank Zappa. They covered a wide variety of music. And the name actually was inspired by a secret society on the Amos and Andy show called the Mystic Knights of the Sea. By the way, Richard Elfman is the father of Bodhi Elfman, who is married to Jenna Elfman of Darman Greg fame.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, Keeping the Faith fame.
Keeping the Faith fame?
Yeah. She was in the movie Keeping the Faith with the Hulk and...
I don't even know what that movie is.
Yeah. Okay. So the Hulk, what's his name? Ed Norton.
Okay. The Hulk.
Yeah. one of the Hulks, is a Christian priest, and his best friend he's a comedian. He was in, Mystery Men.
Okay. Ben Stiller.
Yeah. Ben Stiller is his best friend. And Jenna Elfman is the third friend, that they had growing up.
Okay. And wow, I don't remember this movie at all.
It's kind of forgettable, but there are a few funny lines in it. There's a karaoke guy who does a great version of Jesse's Girl.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Jenna, currently, I mean, the second thing that I could say that I know her from is she's currently on Fear the Walking Dead.
Really?
Yeah,
she's a survivor?
She's a survivor. Well, yeah, it would be... She wouldn't have much of a role if it was brains.
Well, you know.
None of them say brains, by the way.
They could keep her on a leash as a dead person.
Oh, that's true. Okay, good point. Good point. Michonne had, they were a couple recurring zombie characters. Yeah. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Anyway, so just a tangential thing. If you're wondering if there's a relation between Jenna Elfman and Danny Elfman, it's her uncle Danny by marriage. Let's see here. Richard Elfman moved on to making films, and then the leadership role of Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo was passed on to Danny. Danny and the Knights made an appearance on The Gong Show in 1976. They actually were the highest point getters for that episode, so they won the $348.17 or whatever the I'm trying to remember what the prize was for Gong Show. That them performing, though, just some of the weirdest stuff. I think Danny Elfman's running around with a spaceship on his, wearing a spaceship and running around in circles and banging.
It's on YouTube. So go look it up. It's there. I will probably put a clip of some sort of musical reference to it in the show, but
There you go.
Check it out on YouTube because the visual is 90% of it.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it is that as much as the Gong Show was mayhem, they made it even more.
Mayhemier. More
so at the end.
Mayhemier.
Mayhemier. Exactly. All right. The Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo released a single called You Got Your Body Back, and the B-side was called Ballad of the Caveman. They were both written and sung by Danny Elfman. In 1976, they were featured in the film Hot Tomorrows by Martin Brest. They performed two songs. Then they were in I Never Promised You a Rose Garden. Danny at the time was expressing interest in ska and other musical styles, and the song I'm Afraid appeared on a Rhino Records Up and Coming compilation.
This kind of reminds me of how Lars Ulrich got Metallica to start getting noticed. He actually somehow secured himself a spot on the Metal Massacre compilation album, the first one that was released, before he even had a band. And oh, wow. So then he went out and got a band and threw together a song, and it made the Metal Massacre. And that's basically how Metallica got their start, was because Lars had somehow finagled this spot on a compilation album.
Oh, that's amazing. What a man. The forethought to kind of get involved and do that before even having a band together is brilliant.
Yeah.
That's super cool. All right. In 1979, they released the Demo EP. This was a limited print EP for A&R reps and radio stations. They had a contract with IRS Records shortly after that. The next year, they released the Oingo Boingo EP. Basically, it was a new revised version of the first EP that was released by IRS. This is also known as the Electric Cat EP because the graphic on there is a very lightning-y looking picture of a cat, drawing of a cat. I don't know any other way to put it. The next year, or actually later that year, they appeared in Forbidden Zone. Now, to say that they just appeared in this is not even giving them enough credit. This is a film that was directed by Richard Elfman, and it featured the group as they began to move away from their cabaret antics and style. That doesn't mean that you don't see that in here. This is a film with Hervé Villaches, and I can't think if there's anybody else famous. Susan Terrell. I'm trying to think if she went on to anything. I think she was in one of the Pee Wee movies, actually. Oh, she was. She was the bearded lady. Oh, no. She was the world's smallest woman. No, she was the bearded lady in the Big Top Pee Wee. That's right. Anyway, it also featured Danny Elfman dressed as Satan doing a cover version of Minnie the Moocher by Cab Calloway.
Tell you I'm so pleased to meet you. The boys and I've been expecting to greet you. As guest of honor in the house of the dead, just relax, lay yourself down, say goodbye to your head. Hidey, hidey, hide.
Hidey, hidey,
hide. Holy ho, holy ho.
So, I there's some stuff that I found that I will slot in right here, but I can tell you that I would pay money, upwards of hundreds of dollars, to hear you guys film sack this.
I would love to. I do own this on DVD. Probably no surprise to you, but I own this on DVD. I have the soundtrack on both vinyl and CD, and I think I've maybe sat through the whole movie twice.
Yeah, it's like it's like 200 Motels. It's something that happened, and you watch it once, and then you try to watch it again, and you just can't.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird nudity in it, like uncomfortable weird nudity. There's a lot of, I think the best word is just humping. It's not really, you know, having sex. It's just a lot of humping, you know, not with characters that are relatively fully clothed. For whatever reason, I'm visualizing Gramps, old man in a diaper, going and just finding a woman who's turned around and running up behind her and going, burr, 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 and, but still fully dressed. Both of them fully dressed. It's really, really weird.
Okay.
But you see all the members of the band in the film. God, it's just got some weirdness to it. But
I can just imagine what Randy and Brian would have to say about it.
Oh, and Scott. Oh, I mean, Scott would, it would be an entire episode about what grossed Scott out the most. Like it would be, there wouldn't just be one thing. It would be what grossed Scott out the most, the movie Forbidden Zone. Wow, that would be a great one to see. The band lineup settled on an octet. There was Danny, Steve Bartek, Richard Gibbs, Kerry Hatch, Johnny Vados Hernandez on drums, and then the horn section of Leon Schneiderman, a.k.a. Sluggo, Sam Phipps, and Dale Turner. Only a Lad from the EP gained them some regional success. They had a couple, they had a great song there called Ain't This the Life and I'm So Bad. None of those, I think Ain't This the Life may have made another appearance on the Boingo Alive album, but Only a Lad was the song that really actually you saw in future performances. As a matter of fact, it was the title track of the album they released the next year, 1981's Only a Lad. They recorded a new version of Only a Lad for the album. And at the time, then he tried to call them New Wave and lump them in with Devo and Wall of Voodoo, but they used exotic percussion, a lot of horns, some really unusual harmonies, and very strange imagery on their album covers and music videos.
Okay, so they appeared in the movie The Long Shot performing the song I've Got to Be Entertained. And the one thing I can say about this, the sound of this album is it sounded very, very Talking Heads.
You think so?
It felt like he was really channeling his inner Talking Head.
Man, for me, this was so much more accessible at the time than Talking Heads. This is a kid, you know, 12-year-old kid, 13-year-old kid, and Talking Heads to me just felt so highbrow and artsy-fartsy, and Oingo Boingo just felt so rooted in something that I could connect with.
And musically, that's true, but I mean, vocally, he sounded like he was doing Talking Head impersonations. Yeah, like David Byrne.
Yeah, maybe. The next year, they released Nothing to Fear, kind of giving themselves a little bit more hard-edged sound. Wild Sex and the Working Class and Reptiles and Samurai were on this album. Louder guitars, more synthesizers.
So the cover on this album, You Really Got Me, is like Devo's cover of Satisfaction. It just takes it and balls it all up and pulls it out and redoes it in a new way.
Exactly, yeah, which is somebody asked me recently, like, if I liked was that in the intro? Whether I liked Oingo Boingo's You Really Got Me versus Van Halen's You Really Got Me.
Yeah, I think.
And Oingo Boingo's hands down.
Yeah.
It's just them, right? I mean, Van Halen was such a close band to the Kinks, and they were a closer band to the Kinks in sound than Oingo Boingo was. So it's a little bit easier to transcribe that song with a Van Halen style band than it would be Oingo Boingo, and they just do it so well. Mm-hmm. The next year, Good for Your Soul, what a fun album, contained more diverse songwriting and instrumentation, fill the void, Nothing Bad Ever Happens. Feature the band's various influences, including ska and world music.
So No Spill Blood was inspired by the book Island of Dr. Moreau. Yep. And Wake Up was based on the book 1984.
Yeah, I didn't know that second one, but it totally makes sense. Very literary on this album. And initially I thought that No Spill Blood was an Animal Farm thing. So I had George Orwell right. I just had it for the wrong song. Apparently. Yeah, but that No Spill Blood, I mean, boy, more than just inspired. I mean, it's lyrics that come right from the book about, you know, what is the law? We walk on four legs, or we walk on two legs, not on four. And what breaks the law? It's just right straight from the book.
And Iceman comes out and says something.
Val Kilmer
comes out and says something dumb about the movie.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Oh, man, that movie, such a disappointment. It could have been so cool, especially if it would have had Oingo Boingo music. Mm-hmm. In 1984, Danny Elfman released the album solo, kind of, sort of. It was released under his name in order to get around some issues with the music label. And it was a chance for the band to release material that they had written and not used for other albums. And they used it as a chance to experiment with slower tempos as well. But basically, the solo album is Danny Elfman backed by the entire band Oingo Boingo. So it's as much an Oingo Boingo album as any of these other ones that we're talking about.
This, for me, I feel like is the demarcation between the band Oingo Boingo and Danny Elfman and the Boingos.
You think so?
I don't think they ever turned back from that dynamic after this album. And not saying it was bad, not saying it changed too much, but there was a songwriting directional change that happened. And I feel like they never really got back from this.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, and maybe it's just the years and years of listening and having it all kind of gel together for me, that where I don't notice that demarcation as much, but certainly is possible. The next year, Dead Man's Party, 1985. Personnel switches. There were a couple of them, with a new bass player and a new keyboard player.
So they were featured on the soundtrack for Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Weird Science. They appeared in Back to School and in Bachelor Party. Uh-huh. And then in 85, Elfman started scoring Burton films with Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah, it's cool because these movie appearances are basically people who are wealthy enough to afford to hire Oingo Boingo to perform at their parties. Like, somehow Tom Hanks gets Oingo Boingo to perform at this bachelor party. And
Rodney Dangerfield.
I'm trying to remember something. Mellon, I think, was his last name, but I can't remember his first name. But yeah, he's rich enough to not only have a dorm room that is like four dorm rooms all mashed into one, but he's able to have Oingo Boingo perform at his dorm party as well.
Yep.
I would have loved to be able to have Oingo Boingo perform at one of my parties.
That's sure, okay. The kids from Clueless were able to somehow get the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to play at one of their parties.
Right. Oh, see, this seems like it'd be a good trivia question, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Might have to work it in.
Yeah.
So this album, a lot more pop friendly. Stay was a hit for the band. Of course, Dead Man's Party, huge hit for the band. Weird Science went on to be the band's most successful song. Which Elfman stated that he regretted because it didn't feel like it was part of the band's repertoire.
And then furthermore, their music was in That Was Then, This Is Now. Stranger Things have used it. Chuck has used it. Texas Chainsaw Massacre has used it. And the classic film Casper used it too.
Interesting. I didn't know about those last two. I'm going to have to check out what scene Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 uses Oingo Boingo. Hopefully it's not Dead Man's Party. You know, it just feels like
that'd be a little, that's on the nose.
It's a little too on the nose. A lot of their stuff, Dead or Alive, is right on the nose.
Maybe it'll be Gratitude for Texas Chainsaw Massacre too.
There you go. Yeah, totally. In 1987, they released Boy Ngo, Boy hyphen Ngo. Contained some more abstract pop arrangements, and it didn't do as well as Dead Man's Party did commercially. This was actually one of my favorite albums too. The song My Life is really good. And, just trying to think, Elevator Man, I think, is how the album begins. It's a really different direction for them. And I think maybe this is where you start to see less of a focus on the horn section and more of a focus on the rest of the instrumentation.
Yeah. And this for me too, we talk about this a lot when we talk about bands that had this one album that just blew up out of nowhere and their subsequent album doesn't. And then the record labels go like, what the hell? Why can't you recreate the success?
Right. Exactly. We want another one of these. Yeah, we don't want that.
We want four or two. If we're listening to Blues Traveler, we want, you know, the Black Album too. If you're listening to Metallica, everybody has it.
Yeah.
And how bands recover from that huge success says a lot about how that band who that band is.
What's even tougher is when it's your first album out of the gate and it's a huge hit. And then you're trying to evolve as a band and the label's like, no, stay. Mm-hmm. Here are the lines. We're drawing these lines on the ground. Stay in those lines. Mm-hmm. Don't veer out of them. In 1988, they released a double album called Boingo Alive. The band played live in a studio, so no audience, no post-production tricks, things like that. Basically, it was to kind of give listeners that live Oingo Boingo experience, but in album form and without doing it as a quote-unquote live album. Covered songs in their entire catalog, and they added two new songs, one of which, Cinderella Undercover, became a mainstay in their concert performances as well. Really, really good song. 1989, The Best of Boingo, or Best O Boingo, Skeletons in the Closet, was released. And the next year, Dark at the End of the Tunnel, 1990, I think my favorite album. It really surprised me in doing this show that it was my favorite album. But there were so many songs that I kind of highlighted from here that would have ended up on my playlist. I'm like, oh, wow, I must have really, really liked this album. They started moving towards slower songs, less synthesizers, more emotional-based lyrics. When the Lights Go Out was a throwback to their harder days. Runaway was a ska tune.
So also, the soundtracks keep coming. They appeared in Midnight Run and in the hit sequel, Ghostbusters 2. Right next to...
Wow. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 and Ghostbusters 2. Well, you'd think that you would just never need to work again with residuals coming from those. Right?
And to think that Bobby Brown was on the same soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. Everyone was buying it for Bobby Brown. That song, Try to Believe, from this album, from Dark at the End of the Tunnel, is... Musically, there's a refrain that gets played a lot in the movie Midnight Run. Really good movie. Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin. It gets played a lot as an instrumental in the film Midnight Run. And if you pick up the Music for a Darkened Theater, which is the Danny Elfman soundtrack collection, one of the parts of Midnight Run is basically Try to Believe without any lyrics.
Yeah.
It's cool. They were dropped from MCA Records, and they also shuffled up the lineup a little more. The biggest thing to change was that the horns didn't tour with the band anymore, but they were still in the studio when they were recording. Danny also dropped Oingo from the name, and they were just Boingo from that period going forward. There's a separate Best of Boingo and the Best of Boingo. Okay, yep. I was thinking that there was just one greatest hits called Best of Boingo. That was released in 1991, and the year before, 1990, they released another collection called Stay. Which I didn't know about. Is that like a greatest hits?
Yeah, it's another collection of compilations of their stuff.
Gotcha. Okay. In 1994, they released their second album to be called Boingo. This one without the hyphen. And I guess it's their first self-titled album.
Yeah, I guess really so.
Because back in 1987, they were Oingo Boingo still. So that album was not self-titled.
Yeah, that's they got something there.
Weird. These tunes were a little bit more orchestral in nature too.
I wonder why I'm writing for Danny Elfman or Tim Burton all the time now. Elfman.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey was a hit from this period of time.
Hey, I've got a commentary without much to say. You know those damn kids drive me crazy every day. But all I ever think is something to complain.
And thankfully, they varied more of the song keys they wrote in more than Danny does as a writing and score, because Danny's scores are very tonally the same. And the fact that he varied his key usage a little bit more as a pop writer was nice.
Yeah, for sure. In 1996, they recorded and released Farewell Live from Universal Amphitheater, a live album, really good live album. And they performed Cinderella Undercover. They performed a lot of the songs from Boingo. It's a really, really good concert album, and was basically the quote unquote end of the band. In 1999, they released Anthology. And then in 2002, another greatest hits release, The Best of Oingo Boingo 20th Century Masters, came out.
These 20th Century Masters series that started coming out, I really like them. They are really good collections of, I feel like they're consulting with the band when they do them.
Yeah, I think so. They're really well done, really well curated, and not just, you know, their greatest hits. Or not just their, let me, how am I phrasing this? Because they're really greatest hits, but not just like only the top eight songs that did really well. There's like some other ones that were kind of minor hits. And I feel like that's exactly the way that you want to do it.
Yeah. No, whoever's putting the 20th Century Masters collections together, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, for sure. You also hear a very different version of at least the vocals of I Love Little Girls on that Farewell album, by the way. I forgot to mention that he changes up the melody of how they sing I Love Little Girls on that album.
To not sound as happy? or guilty?
Actually, I'd say, I hate to say it, he kind of sounds happier. But it's like his vocal part is way more melodic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'll have to listen to it.
No, I did. I was just joking around, trying to feed you joke lines.
I know. It's such a hard album to, or a hard song to say, oh, what a great song. Because, I mean, the subject matter is so taboo. Not just taboo. I mean, it's just, you know.
It's gross. It's not just taboo.
It's gross. You could not do a song like this in 2018. And no question about it.
Speaking of that, though, we're going to face a similar hurdle coming up in a couple weeks when we cover another band.
Oh, right. We talked about this, didn't we?
Mm-hmm, we did.
Yeah. All right. We'll get to that.
Yeah. Teaser.
All right. What's that?
Teaser.
Yeah, no kidding. I love that. Suspense. Danny Elfman's legacy as a composer has touched many of the largest films ever.
Films like Army of Darkness and Sam Raimi's Spider-Man.
Yep. And he has irreversible hearing loss and is worried that playing live would exacerbate it, which totally makes sense. I mean, they're a loud band to see live, too. So especially when you've got horns up on stage and you're running around in a white wife beater T-shirt and get really close to the horn section. I can't remember if Sluggo, Phipps, or Turner was the trumpet player, but it could get pretty loud.
So just before you get into the next thing, I feel like the B-52s and Oingo Boingo should have toured together in
that would
heyday.
Have been a great concert. Yeah. That would have been really, really good. I can't remember who opened for Oingo Boingo when I saw them the first time at Rainbow Music Hall, but I do remember seeing the B-52s and their opening act was the Violent Femmes, which I thought was a good combo.
Yeah, that is a good combo. Mm-hmm.
Like Boingo, Violent Femmes, B-52s would be a great, great mm-hmm. combo. Yeah. And Johnny Vado still actually keeps the Oingo Boingo thing going. It's called like Boingo Dance Party, and they get a different vocalist every time, and then they go through all the hits. I think Steve Bartek, Johnny Vados, and two of the three horn section are the original members mm-hmm. involved with it.
Yeah,
but they're going to be performing in Anaheim. Oh, wait, I think we talked about this in the intro too, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. We did
that a few days before BlizzCon. I might have to go see him anyway. On Halloween 2015, Danny Elfman sang along with the other original voices from the movie The Nightmare Before Christmas, including Catherine O'Hara, for example. They did a performance at the Hollywood Bowl singing all of the songs from the movie while it played in its entirety with a complete orchestra playing the music. The encore for the event culminated in Danny Elfman and Steve Bartek performing Dead Man's Party for the first time live in 20 years to the day. That is so cool.
Yeah. Wow. I wonder if there are bootlegs of that floating around.
Oh, man. It'd be really cool to see it. Yeah. It was 2015. People had cell phones. People would have been recording it. It's got to be on YouTube somewhere. And as a small tribute to the band Southern California based Blizzard Entertainment, we've heard of them. They do a little game called World of Warcraft. They included character references to some band members and the starting area for the undead, the Forsaken in the computer game World of Warcraft. Fitting to one of the band's running themes, new adventurers can find skeletons and zombies with names such as Daniel Ulfman, Carol Graves, Stephen Bartek, B-H-A-R-T-E-C, and Samuel Phipps. And I played as a Forsaken. You know, went through that starting area, and I don't remember any of those. I wish I would have caught that, because that's brilliant. That's totally brilliant.
You'll have to log back in and check it out.
I will. I have to go back to the starting area. All right, so that's the history of the band. Now tell me about their statistics and general notes.
Okay, before I get into this, I would have thought they would have been far, 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 far more popular with the charts than I think they, as I learned, they were. So
yeah.
Dead Man's Party was the first to break the top 100 album chart of theirs, and it ended up going gold. They never got higher than number 71 in the album charts. Weird Science reached number 45 in the U.S. charts and number 39 in Australia. Winning Side reached number 14 on the Modern Rock chart. When the Lights Go Out was 15 on the Modern Rock chart, and they reached 23. Oh, and Hey reached 23 on the Modern Rock chart as well. So the Modern Rock chart seems to like them, but the actual solid Billboard singles and album charts, they never actually did all that well. Which is
just weird science, which is disappointing. And you'd think like the movie appearances and all that stuff would have really helped them, you know?
I'm just wondering if somehow they were perceived as being too weird, or they were just soundtracky bands. I don't know.
I think so.
Because Kenny Loggins did really well with soundtracks. I don't know why they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But that could have been it. I mean, it could just been they gave the appearance of just being such a weird band that it was kryptonite for Billboard.
And I'm wondering, too, if their success would have been any different if they had formed and gotten started 10 years earlier and they released the exact same albums through the 90s and early 2000s with all the ska and music stuff that was going on then.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting to, you know, an alternate universe where Danny Elfman didn't get hearing loss and decided to keep the band going. Because I'm guessing that was like a huge part of breaking up Oingo Boingo, is just not wanting to make that any worse.
And also, I mean, he was rolling in
money.
Yeah, he was rolling in Tim Burton cash. So
right, right. Yeah, so alternate universe. Wonder if their sound would have been more ska had he... would have followed the trend of ska. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. Yep. All right. Well, while you did that, I pulled up setlist.fm. Let's talk about their Stairway to Heaven songs. I've seen the band live twice, and I can tell you that all these songs that we mentioned here were played live.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
That means they got the right band.
That's right. You want to go through the list?
Sure. Wild Sex in the Suburbs, Weird Science.
Working Class.
Whoa, sorry. Same thing.
Sure, sure.
Wild Sex in the Working Class, Weird Science, Stay, Gratitude, and my choice would have to be Dead Man's Party.
It seems like the obvious choice, and I would have said that too. The only caveat or the only drawback to that being the most played is that it came on their fifth or sixth album. So they had a lot of touring that they did before that. They've their biggest heyday of touring, surprisingly, not surprisingly, 1985 around Dead Man's Party. But even prior to that, 12 tours a year, 10 tours a year, 14 tours a year through the 80s, through the early 80s. So they did a lot of touring before that. And this kind of reflects it. It's a very short list, and I don't know how much I believe it or not believe it, but I mean, their top song only has 38 plays, and that is Grey Matter. Yeah, which surprises me. Dead Man's Party's in third place, tied with Who Do You Want to Be, one of the songs they did from Bachelor Party, or one of the songs they performed in the movie Bachelor Party, if I remember correctly. Wild Sex in the Working Class is in second place, Just Another Day, No One Lives Forever, Only a Lad, Stay, Sweat, and No Spill Blood, rounding out the top 10.
Okay.
But that does surprise me, that I would have expected to see a lot more concerts listed here because 38 plays.
Look
would
under
mean,
just for giggles. Look under Danny Elfman.
Okay. Also, don't know if they broke out.
Boingo.
Yeah. Just as a thing. Danny Elfman. This is interesting too. Has performed. So he's done 12 concerts, and he's performed Planet of the Apes, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Corpse Bride, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Dark Shadows, Beetlejuice. These are all the songs, you know, in
his soundtrack rapport.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. Let's look at Boingo, just plain Boingo. There's no listing for just Boingo. So it's Oingo Boingo and Oingo Boingo Dance Party. Yeah, very strange. I would have expected just a lot more. A lot more performances total. Maybe they didn't tour very much. Maybe that's it.
Maybe. You know? I mean, their one live album didn't have an audience, so that should tell you something.
Well, they have two. Farewell is another live album, but yeah, you're right. Yeah. Man, October 21st, 1995, they played the Aladdin Theater in Vegas. That would have been another good one to see.
Oh, wow. Because that doesn't exist anymore.
Nope. No, neither of those things exist anymore. Yeah, that was just a few days before the big farewell concert. So, that would have been so cool to see. All right. Well, we know they cover I Am the Walrus by the Beatles. We know they cover You Really Got Me by the Kinks. What other song would we like to hear them cover? And I'll go first. It's going to be a very interesting thing because my choice takes Danny Elfman almost completely out of the mix. And it's a cover of Axel F by Harold Faltermeyer.
This is an interesting pick, and I want to hear why you picked it.
Yeah. So imagine they've done a couple instrumentals. The big one, of course, is I don't know the big one, but kind of the one that comes to mind the most quickly is Cry of the Vados from Good for Your Soul, which is when they performed it live. It was sampling being added to Johnny Vados's drum set. And so you're actually not hearing keyboards. You're not hearing anything. You're hearing Johnny Vados playing the drums, but instead of do, you're hearing the noises, the ooh, 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 and stuff like that, mm-hmm. that have been assigned to each of the different guitar the drum pads, mm-hmm. which I think is really cool. So it'd be something similar to that. So imagine, you know, the synth lead, replace it with the horn section. So get the horns there. So they'd be, you know, doing their thing. Kind of like the, like they do for the beginning of Dead Man's Party. And then the bass line, the do, 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 do. I guess I don't need to explain what the bass line is from Axel F. I'm totally brain-splaining it, aren't I? Replaced by that vocal and synth combo, kind of like what they did in Cry of the Vado. So it'd still be, it'd be that whoop, 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 you know, like that that thing like they did for Cry of the Vados, where they've got a combo of synthesizer and someone's vocals. They could use Danny Elfman vocals there. Mm-hmm. And I think this thing would be so damn cool. It would have that. You would easily be able to ingrain everything that is Oingo Boingo into that song and make it a really, really cool song.
Yep. It's interesting you picked that one because the one I picked was Duran Duran's View to a Kill. And the reason I picked this is because it's got an odd time signature to begin with, which is kind of in Boingo's wheelhouse.
For sure.
And then it's got some horn parts, which is also in their wheelhouse. And then on top of that, it's something that I think they could very easily interpret into an Oingo Boingo tune.
Yeah, totally. And it's... We both picked soundtrack songs, which is like catnip to Danny Elfman, isn't it?
I kept thinking of, that they could do kind of a tongue-in-cheek spy thing, and that's where my brain went, and it's weird that your brain kind of went to the same place.
Yeah, could you imagine an Oingo Boingo James Bond theme?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get into our playlist. This is where we take some songs that maybe aren't on the greatest hits list. Maybe are. I don't know. We'll see. And we recommend them to combine with the greatest hits to give you a really cool combo of the familiar and the less familiar when you listen to their music. My first one, and I decided to put this first because it might appear on one of the longer greatest hits albums. I don't think it'll appear on like the short list greatest hits albums, but if there's like that anthology is a double disc set, I'll bet you the song appears on it. And that song is We Close Our Eyes. From the Boy Ingo album, the Boy hyphen Ingo album. Just the positivity and the message that this song sends, I really, really like. And it's some unusual instrumentation. The drums are a very electronic sounding. I don't know, I just really, really dig it. The next one comes to us from one of the soundtracks, Goodbye, Goodbye, which is played at the end of Fast Times at Ridgemont High. This song is the second best thing about the movie Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And it's used as the background music. It's the best use of that "Where Are They Now" trope that movies have. Like, and then this person went on to do this after this movie, and then this other person went on to do that. And
made famous by Animal House, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say Animal House is the first. It's the first use that I can remember. It's definitely not the first use. There's definitely earlier films that do that. Because I did a whole set of these for last year's Battle of the Frog Pants All-Stars.
Yeah.
But Animal House is the first time I ever remember seeing that. Yeah. And Fast Times at Ridgemont High was just a year or two after that.
Yeah, we'll call it popularized by Animal House.
For sure. The next one comes to us from the solo album. It's a song called The Last Time.
Did they shoot first?
Solo. Mm-hmm. They did. Totally did. The instrumentation on this is just so bizarre and unusual for Danny Elfman. It's got like, there's almost like a Japanese keyboard style. That Japanese, what do they call that?
Samishin?
Kitaro or something like that. It's like it's a string instrument, but it kind of sounds xylophone-y.
Not sitar.
Yeah.
It's going to kill me. Kyoto?
That's the name of a city.
Yeah.
I know. I was trying to think, like Kitaro or something like that. I can't remember. But anyway, I think they use a sound similar to that. Probably a keyboard affectation that sounds just like that. But really, really cool song. Number four, Out of Control. Another song with a great message, and man, you go from these original, songs.
It's called Akoto.
Akoto, thank you. So very similar when you said Kyoto. Mm-hmm. Nicely done. Out of Control. So really good message, but you compare it to their earlier songs where they've got troubled characters like the kid in Only a Lad and the main character in Little Girls and the bad crap that happens and Nothing Bad Ever Happens to Me and stuff like that. And all these deeply troubled characters. And then you've got this song called Out of Control, which is almost like the light version of that. It's like a more realistic, hey, maybe your problems aren't that you're tying up a family, beating them up and taking everything they had and getting away. But, you know, you're going through some troubles, and here's a song, a positive song, positive message about that. And then my last song is Try to Believe. This is also from Dark at the End of the Tunnel. This was, I mentioned earlier, like they used the music for Midnight Run, and then I think you went back and added lyrics to it, or maybe vice versa. But I just love that song and love the message and the sound of it. So super cool.
That just goes to show that the music supervisor worked really closely with the score composer, who then worked well with Danny Elfman.
Yeah. Right.
That's a production that had good communication.
Yes. Well, I think probably two of those three people you just mentioned are Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Means he had good communication with himself.
That's right. Exactly.
So I do want to say that on occasion, he has a Rick Ocasek quality to his voice.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we found out at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year that it's pronounced Rick Ocasek.
Oh, okay. Ocasek. Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Rick Ocasek.
Ocasek. That's right. I do remember that.
Yeah. So weird. I'll never pronounce it Ocasek, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm always going to pronounce it Ocasek.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I wanted to bring up is a lot of the early stuff really did sound like Dare to Be Stupid by Weird Al.
There is kind of a, yeah. I mean, that's Weird Al's tribute to Devo. However, boy, the lines of Devo and Oingo Boingo did definitely cross more than once in their sound in the early 80s, for sure.
Yeah, it was a little distracting at times to have to shake my head and go, no, this isn't Weird Al doing it. This is actually them.
Right.
All right. So my first one is probably considered a hit. You actually brought it up on one of our year episodes.
I
think it was in 88 when we did it or whatever. No, what was that year?
That 84, would have been 80,
84. 84. It was the 84 when you actually brought this up. And it's Gratitude. To you, has it been everything that you expected it to be? Was it as good for you as it was good for me? And was it everything that it was all set up to be? Now is that gratitude? Ooh, now is that gratitude? And it's by Danny and the Boingos. And, and I'm sure it could be considered a hit, but the reason I like this is because it really does kind of in one song encapsulate everything that they did as a group.
Yeah.
It's a little bit offbeat. It's a little bit off kilter, left of center as far as pop music goes, but it's really well done. And it's got a very interesting sound that keeps you listening. You don't want to skip forward. You want to see what they're going to do next with this song, which is pretty interesting for songs, you know, that run 3.5-4 minutes tops typically.
For sure.
And so they're making you pay attention for the entirety of that 4 minutes. So it's not something you can just stop and go, oh yeah, that's Gratitude, and then not pay attention anymore. They're kind of grabbing you and making you pay attention. And that's something they do throughout their career. And it's something I do admire about them as a band, which really comes in handy for the next song.
Okay.
Because it's Change.
Oh,
from the Boingo album.
This one was like made for you, wasn't it?
There's a dust storm in my mind. Seems I can't see straight these days. Doesn't matter anyway. And hey, don't you know, we're just products of our time. And hey, what do you say? Show me your...
This is the Oingo Boingo Epic, clocking in at 15 minutes plus.
I don't know why. It's funny. I did not even register that this was just like made for a fan of the band that shall not be mentioned.
The Voldemort of bands.
The Voldemort of bands. Exactly. Yes.
All right. So I really love this one. Not just because it's long and not just because it's, you know, kind of the joke that I have, but it really does progress, evolve, and keep you kind of wrapped up in it. You're guessing what's going to happen next. And then takes you on this journey.
Yeah.
And they use their 15 minutes very well to tell a story and to get you to really kind of care about what's next coming up next in the song. So I really enjoy it.
Yeah, they totally do. It's very, it doesn't feel like a bunch of stuff all jammed together. It's really, really well done.
You can tell that Danny had already been doing a lot of scores when he did this one, mm-hmm. because it flows very much like a score would, except in smaller chunks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And finding 10 seconds, 45 seconds, whatever I put in here for a 15-minute song.
Especially one that changes every couple minutes.
Yeah. I'm going to, I'll find something that I like and stick it in. The rest of you guys have to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah, for sure.
I did that with Grendel last week, so just deal with it. The next one I picked was Hey.
Hey, I've got a commentary without much to say. You know those damn kids drive me crazy every day. But all I ever think is something to complain.
From Boingo, which, by the way, I have to say, Boingo was my favorite album as we listened to this. I enjoyed the others, but mm-hmm. this is the one that I ended up going to iTunes and buying.
Yeah, that's what I would expect too, because the it's that kind of crossover from the punk and ska direction that they started in into something way heavier. And I felt like, okay, if they would have kept going, that's probably where you would have started picking them up and being a fan of the band, mm-hmm. I think.
One thing about Hey that I really liked about it is I kept thinking that Pearl Jam should cover it. Mm. I think it's perfect for a Pearl Jam cover.
Oh, totally. Yeah, no kidding. That's cool.
The next one is It Only Makes Me Laugh, and I called this one Dead Man Ska. Because it really is just, it is Oingo Boingo at its sky-iest.
This would have been on my list had I not already seen it in years, because this is one of my favorite songs by them too. And I replaced it with We Close Our Eyes, which is another one of my favorites. So it's not like I really had to struggle to find a replacement, but I'm glad you picked this.
Yeah, it really is. The benefit of being the guy who does the notes is I get to pick the songs.
Yep, exactly. And I'm totally fine with that. If I really need one, I can always demand it back from you, or we just both recommend it, which is fine too.
Let's see. The last one I picked. Oh, no, I actually had a bonus track, which is weird.
You did, yes.
So Reptiles and Samurai from Nothing to Fear. It's got a really, really cool build into the song, and his voice fits exactly what this song needed to have. I mean, it's amazing how no other voice on the planet could have done that song.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. No, not no doubt, just them.
But it's a fun song.
It's a fun song because I visualize, I never saw them perform it this way in concert. But I'd love to see them like have a chart comparing Reptiles and Samurai, because that's what the song does. It's mm-hmm. like Reptiles have silly grins, but Samurais, they smile never.
Actually, you know, like, I would love to see like a Brian Dunaway animated version of this song.
Oh, how cool would that be? Yeah.
And my bonus track is Insanity. I had to add it because it's such a cool tune with his voice against the bass, and then you throw in the children.
Yeah.
It's so orchestrated, and it's Elfman at this peak Elfman Boingo period of time where the two are kind of in a ball. He hasn't quite turned into solely scoring man.
Right.
And it's not quite, you know, early Oingo Boingo. It's just two in the synthesis that's really quite awesome. And again, it's from Boingo. So, I mean, I picked three songs from that one.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good choice. The I forgot how much I like that album, too. And that Insanity is just so, it is so creepy cool. I mean, those kids' vocals add a very creepy level to it, like a creepy doll kind of feel to it. But the message, and we were talking about that with Joe at the top of the show, about how they had a lot of political and you know, change the world kind of messages in their songs. And boy, this one even talks about 100 million or 75 million years of evolution, and we end up with Danny Quayle. And I feel like this song could be written over and over and over with the enemy of the day,
yeah.
You know, whoever they wanted to use it for.
Anytime they played it live, I'm sure they could just switch out politically, like even in other countries. Yeah. Whoever their target was to make the crowd go cheer.
Totally. Yep. Yeah. Very cool. Ah, such a great band. I'm glad we did that. I'm glad Joe made us do it.
And he's already told us what the one he wants us to do for next season is. And again, I'm not super familiar with him, and you love him.
Oh, really? Okay, good. Because that was going to be my worry is that, I mean, they're a very popular band, very famous band. I guess we're just going to be very, very
oblique.
Suspenseful about it, but it's good. I'm glad to hear that you're not as familiar, because then it will make it kind of that thing we're looking for the show.
Yep.
So great. All right, cool. That, however, won't be our next episode. Our next episode, we'll be looking at Third Eye Blind.
How did we get to them?
This was, you know, you and I doing our list and saying, all right, we need a band from the 90s, few albums, and kind of rock. Because what we do is we try, I know it sounds like all we do is say, let's list all of the prog and ska bands and do them. But that's not how we do Soundography. We actually have a big list of bands that we want to do for the show. And what we try to do is say, all right, what holes do we have here? We've got a lot of 80s and 2000s stuff here. Okay, we need somebody from the 90s. We have a lot of metal and, you know, light rock and da-da-da. So we need like just a regular like rock, maybe punk band. And that's how we filled them in the spot. We're just like, all right, well, these guys fit the criteria we're looking for. And I know maybe two songs.
Yep.
I know Semi-Charmed Life and Jumper, and that's it.
I think I know Semi-Charmed Life, and that might be about it.
Oh, you know Jumper. I wish you would step back from that ledge, my friend. You could cut ties with all the lies you've been living in. No?
No, I don't think so.
I love your
version of it, though.
That was a spot-on representation of that song. So
nailed it.
If that didn't do it, then you don't know that song. That's hilarious. All right, cool. Well, that'll be coming up next week on Soundography. If you want to get in touch with us, do it. Do it. Pull out your keyboard, your computer keyboard, and type in soundographypodcast@gmail.com, and then type a bunch of stuff to us. We want to hear what you have to say about the show, about our selections, even about how we do it, how we make the show. We're happy to talk to you. You can follow us on Twitter @TheSoundography. We always let you know what band or what shows are going up, and we even give you a little bit of a preview, which is really cool. So you can hear like a little snippet from the show. I love that. Everything else is right there at soundography.com. You'll find all of our previous episodes, show notes for every episode, which include our playlist link to Spotify, where you can listen to our playlists. You'll find a link to buy whichever greatest hits album we recommend. I think it's going to be Anthology for this one, because that is such a gorgeous two disc set. And it's got so much good stuff on it.
Yeah.
Including some live stuff. I think this is that's going to be the one. And you'll also find a link to support us on Patreon. We encourage you to do so. If you enjoy what you're hearing, throw us a buck or two a month. That's all it is. That's all we want. And if you throw us more, you'll be like Joe, and you'll make us listen to a band. And maybe it won't be one I love as much as Oingo Boingo. Maybe you'll make me listen to something horrible, and in which case, good on you. I can't wait for that. But that is it. I guess we'll see you next week for Third Eye Blind. Until then, on behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Abbott saying we will see you next time right here on Soundography.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.